Chris.
Yeah. Sports Radio 101. The voice cracks when you have no sleep. It did a little bit, didn't it? But we hit the yes sir strong. 12:03, Mick Monagle here with you on the Fan. 5 hour midnight ride as we take you till 5 o'clock in the warm up show. 888-808-1019. That's the number to call. We got Fleegs on the other side, and we're rolling with you again for 5 hours on our midnight ride, all the way to the warm up show. Let's talk a little Mets. We'll get to the Giants, and I don't know if I've ever heard anyone refer to multiple brouhahas. It's usually just a brouhaha. But apparently there were multiple, at least according to Pat Boyle. So we'll get into the Giants and the fight and Daniel Jones. But we got to start with the New York Mets, who bounced back off of an ugly, really just unfortunate, disgusting series against the Anaheim Angels. I know I can't get away from Anaheim. The Los Angeles Angels, as you know, we talked about how important the stretch was, the beginning of this road trip, the beginning of this month, watching Arizona, who again, Jacques Peterson hitting home runs, and Arizona wins another ball game, and the Mets find themselves now, after beating the St. Louis Cardinals in a quick pop-up game to finish off a series rained out earlier in the year, and now have won the season series against St. Louis. So there's the tiebreaker right there against the Cardinals, who now they are 2.5 games in front of in the wild card standings, but they are now behind all three teams, all three tied in the standings. And the Mets are 1.5 back of San Diego, Arizona, and Atlanta after another just, this is the Mets that for me you've grown accustomed to. I talked about it yesterday and their inability to bounce back off of the brutal Saturday night. Off of the late inning home run, off of blowing that game, off of the new reliever Brazoban blowing the game. They come back. They have a miserable performance. The offense hasn't been hitting. The offense has been struggling. We wake up to the news, or at least I do. You know, I don't even remember where I woke up. I was taking my son to a minor league facility for a baseball camp. I'm sleeping in the parking lot. People probably think I'm weird. I have no idea what's going on, what time of day I found these things out or not. But you hear the lineup switch to try and impact this lineup, and we talked about it last night with Pete Alonso, and we're about to get in to Pete Alonso. But moving him down, moving the entire order down to put Taylor in the two spot, which I just felt there were other options if you were going to do it. But Mendoza, you got to give this guy credit. Man, he has a feel for this team. He has a feel for this club. He's been, and you know he likes, you know where he gets his tinkering his lineup from? Aaron Boone. You know that. The years of working behind Aaron Boone got a little tinker of the lineup in his blood from working with the Yankees. But he moves the lineup around really off of still winning baseball. Like we said, they hadn't lost a series since earlier in the year, earlier in the month. All of July hadn't lost a series. So yes, the offense has been struggling, as I've talked about, since the All-Star break. And yes, you know, the runners in scoring position has certainly been bottoms of the league this side of the Chicago White Sox. So, but despite that, yes, an ugly series against the Angels and losing the last two games, but ultimately still playing fairly winning baseball, but he doesn't like to wait around. And he decided to switch this lineup up, and he pushed back the slumping Nimmo. He's pushed back the slumping Alonso to fifth. He inserts Taylor. I thought there were other options, but he puts Taylor in. And, of course, Taylor finds himself in the biggest spot of the game with the bases loaded. He comes through with the double down the line to clear the bases to give this a nice, comfortable victory. I also thought the Bader hit right before then, especially for a team that's struggling with runners in scoring position, you're looking for that first one. Yeah, the double obviously breaks the game open, makes it comfortable. But that first hit from Bader, whenever you're struggling to get big hits, it kind of becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. We've seen it time and time again with both teams, certainly the Yankees and the Mets. When you get into this rut of not coming through, the bat grips a little tighter, the situations become a little tougher. Suddenly you're underneath that high fastball, you're looking to drive in the air and you pop it up. Like, those things happen all the time. And for Bader, who's been unbelievable for this team, let's just, like, we've known him here, Yankee fans, New York sport fans, we saw him traded for him when he was in the boot a couple years ago. playoff Bader was a thing, but ultimately felt like a fourth outfielder who's a terrific center fielder, but the stick just isn't there to be a key cog of a real winning team. And yet here he is hitting ninth, coming through with the big hit that breaks open the idea that they can't hit with runners in scoring position, lightens the load a little bit for Taylor to dump it down the right field line. And it just feels like in every big spot, this guy has come up. It just feels like every time they need Bader, this guy has been there for them, whether defensively and obviously offensively. He's having a career year. This is why I talk about how special the Mets feel. Yeah, they've struggled offensively since the All-Star break, but if you look at it, you've got, you know, Vientos gets the day off after hitting into a double play in the eighth inning, but Vientos and his prowess that has now, you know, emerged here. Iglesias and what he's meant to the team and how he's been having a career year for a veteran player who's been around the league, been an All-Star, and he's having a career year, suddenly called up, you know, mid-season with the Mets. You got, obviously, now McNeil, who had another home run in this game to give him the final run of this game, who's been dominant, you know, has an OPS of 1,100 since the All-Star break. You look up and down this lineup, Taylor is another guy. You plug into a big spot, you make him the focal point of this game, putting him second, and he finds his way. Like, there are special things happening with the Mets, and Bader having a career year and being the player for them at the bottom of the order is one of them. And the other, as I'm burying the lead, is Manaea, who was just terrific in this game. Again, and I was listening a little bit to the Rico at the very beginning on my ride in. It just started live with Evan. And I was listening to a little bit of the Rico. How about this for a stat? Manaea is the second pitcher in Mets history. The third pitcher in Mets history, now behind Doc Gooden and Tom Seaver, to have consecutive starts of seven innings or better, scoreless, with 10-plus strikeouts. DeGrom never did that, amazingly enough. He is now the third pitcher. Back-to-back dominant performances from Manaea, who's got everything working. I mean, even when he was at his best, 10, 11 strikeouts, 21 strikeouts in his last two games, that's not who the Mets thought they were getting. That's not who we thought was here. I mean, this is a pitch to contact, slow throwing lefty, you know, has to locate extremely well, take a little off, add a little here and there, keep hitters off balance. To have 21 strikeouts in two games and be a dominant force for this team in a game that's enormous. Like, let's not minimize what this game meant for the Mets in the middle of the stretch following two-game losing streak to the Anaheim Angels to pop in, guarantee yourself a tiebreaker in these jumbled up NL wildcard, and to just get back on the right foot. And a couple of things you see from this team that I love, and I talk about the response. Yeah, you didn't get the response off Saturday, but you get the response off of the travel situation they find themselves in, off of losing the first series in a month. They come back, they respond, they pitch well. Obviously, Manaea's unbelievable to start the game. Even though the first couple of innings, offensively, they don't do much, they come through. And the other thing that's been a hallmark card of this offense when it's going well, what you've noticed about this offense when it is at its peak, which it really hasn't been other than a handful of games since the All-Star break, when they're going well, they put up crooked numbers. They have innings where they score multiple runs. They're not the team where you look up at the scoreboard and it's the picket fence of 1-1-1. You know, if they score six runs, it's usually five or six in an inning. They have these big innings where they constantly attack. And when you get the Bader hit that gives you the one run, and to follow it up with the Taylor double and to score, you know, four there, that's game-changing. And especially with the way Manaea's been pitching, when you put up those crooked numbers, it just gives you a feel. It gives the team a feel. It gives you that relaxing feel of, okay, we've got this game under control now. And those innings are massive to get that big hit. Those are innings that add on and pile on and change games. And especially for a team that's been struggling, you know, to score, as St. Louis has at times, I mean, you put up four there and you have Manaea dealing and this game feels over. And so this was a very impressive win, ho-hum, matter-of-fact, comfortable win for the New York Mets in a spot that they desperately needed it, in a spot where they're dealing with, you know, flying to Anaheim, flying to St. Louis for a day. Now they're off to Colorado to go play another lousy team that they can't stub their toe on and have to figure out a way to at least take two out of three. You'd love to be greedy and get a sweep, but you're looking for at least two out of three. Build on this performance from Manaea. Build on this performance from the offense. Hopefully this breaks this stretch they've been on where they've really struggled with runners in scoring position. And hopefully they can build on this and go into Colorado and take two out of three and continue on in this. Right now, unfortunately, it wasn't like this week ago, chase of San Diego, Atlanta, and Arizona. And they are a game and a half back, and they are right in the thick of things. And that's why it was so puzzling to hear some of the stuff I heard pregame from Pete Alonso. And let's get into Pete Alonso, because I talked about Pete Alonso last night. I had multiple callers, actually. It's funny they decided to move the lineup, because I had multiple callers last night talking about moving Pete Alonso down the lineup, and I was against it. And I was today when I saw the lineup. I didn't necessarily think it was the right thing to do, but hey, it worked. So I probably would have kept Pete Ford. It's the first time he's hit below fourth since 2020. He's been a key, obviously, figure in this team, and he's been struggling offensively. There's no doubt about it. Even defensively in this game, like, he comes up and fields the bunt, and he makes a play at second base. Now, he makes it. But if that slide doesn't have the foot 6 feet in the air, God knows why his foot's so high. I mean, that might have been a misplace in judgment. Sometimes you just want to just take the out, especially with the score being the score. But the fact of the matter is Pete Alonso has struggled. And we talk about runners in scoring position. Pete Alonso, and I talked about this yesterday, he has not traditionally struggled with runners in scoring position. He has been a clutch hitter for the Mets. But the fact of the matter is, this year he's not. He's struggling. He's struggling, and pretty much he's having a down season. He's struggling offensively. And before the game, he was asked about these comments. And, you know, for a while here, I have been hesitant to really get on Pete and claim that the contract and the free agency is weighing on his mind. Sometimes you just have bad seasons. Sometimes you just have down years. Let's be honest, a lot of last year, I think a lot of it had to do with a wrist injury, but a lot of last year was a little bit of a down year for Pete. But clearly his numbers are down. They're winning despite him. I've said this a bunch of times. You could point, I just mentioned Bader. I've talked about Taylor here in the lineup. You can point to a bunch of different New York Mets and say, that guy has impacted the Mets winning. That guy had a stretch where he was carrying the team. That guy has had a moment I can remember where he turned the Mets game around, season around, week around, whatever. It's tough to find that moment and point to Pete Alonso. It just is. Pete Alonso not only is having a down year, Pete Alonso is having a down impactful year. He is not impacting the Mets in winning as much as he ever has. Like, he's every other year he's been more impactful than this year. And especially when you're talking about role players like Iglesias, you're talking about role players like Taylor, you're talking about guys getting their feet wet in their career like Vientos, you're talking about guys who have been around the league and considered fourth outfielders like Bader. To have all of those players, let alone the real leaders and stars of this team in Lindor and Nimmo having the impact they had, to look around this team and see how this team, I don't want to say winning despite Pete, but they're certainly not winning because of him in any way, shape, and form. And I talked about it yesterday. He's making this contract something that I thought would be one of the more difficult moments in this owner's tenure. And immediately, a year in, give David Stearns one of the most difficult decisions he has as president of baseball operations for this Met team. Because I don't know how they feel about him. I don't know if they want to give him the big money. I don't know how he wants, if he is still hung up on the big money. But it felt like whatever their value for Pete Alonso is, unless you want to, you know, catch the ire of the fan base, you're going to have to pay him. Because it felt like the connection to this fan base, the idea he's possibly the greatest position player by the end of his career in Mets history, with all these home runs, with, you know, LFMG, I always say that wrong, you know, let's effing go Mets, all the ripping the shirt off, the polar bear, all the different stuff that Pete Alonso, the home run derby, everything that has come with Pete Alonso, 50 home run seasons. It felt like an owner who's tapped into the fan base was going to have a very difficult decision if it was going to come down to a contract negotiation that got hairy. If it was going to come down to Boris, who took the biggest L of his career last offseason and is looking to make gains this year. It felt like, wow, this is going to be a tough one because I don't know how they feel about him. The numbers might get crazy, but can he really allow Pete Alonso to leave and let this fan base be furious, a guy who's stepped up and given them the jerseys they want, given them the statues of Tom Seaver they want, given them old-timers day like they want. I mean, you know, besides the money he's put into the team, the biggest thing, because it hasn't led to as much winning as you'd like, the biggest thing this owner has done is really send the message to the fan base of you have a friend and a companion and another fan owning the team, which was the exact opposite how the fan base felt about the Wilpons. That is the biggest difference. Yes, the money. Yes, giving Scherzer the contract. Yes, giving Lindor the contract. Of course. Of course, the money, especially over the last handful of years. We all know why. But not only is it the money, not only is it the payroll, but it's the, hey, I hear you. I'm one of you. Things are going to change. We are going to celebrate Mets history. We are going to do what we're going to bring back jerseys you love. We're going to put a statue of a Met here at Citi Field. This is the kind of thing that has been about this owner. And so I thought it was going to be a very difficult decision if the numbers and the fans don't add up on it, on the Pete Alonso discussion. But he is playing himself into a position right now, and he didn't help himself with the comments we're about to play right now in the pregame, where he's no longer endeared to this fan base. And they're watching one of the more fun seasons with a bunch of different stories, whether it's Grimace or whether it's OMG or whatever the case may be, a whole lot of fun happening in a season that looked like they were dead, to have a players' meeting not called by Pete but called by Lindor, and to have him immediately become one of the best hitters in baseball when he's moved to leadoff hitter, and watch Nimmo out there calling for additions to the team while he's having the best power and offensive season of his career with the Mets. And Alonso has just steadily done nothing and had a baseline of nothing throughout this whole year. And for the first time, I'm really starting to realize, you know what? This has weighed on him on such an impact that he's so defensive in his comments and so selfish in his thought process in this comment here. And I'm not saying he's a selfish player. These comments are selfish. But what he said pregame when asked about his struggles speaks volumes to me. And this is what Pete Alonso had to say pregame when he was asked about his numbers. To be fair, he brings up his numbers. He was specifically asked about his numbers, but asked about his struggles with this team and himself. And this was his response pregame today before the game in St. Louis.
The numbers are not quite where they usually are. Just, is there anything you can put a finger on of why you haven't fully been able to come around, do you think?
I'm in a position where, I mean, I'm on pace for close to 40 homers. I'm an all-star, I was an all-star this year, so I think that, to beat myself up or be frustrated, it's really no use. And I'm really excited for the end of the year where we get to play winning baseball. So I'm really excited. I'm happy with what I've accomplished this year so far. And I think that there's definitely going to be some opportunities that I'm looking forward to capitalizing on.
That is as bad an answer that you can give to that question as I've ever heard. First of all, a couple of things. One, he's not on pace for 40 home runs. He's not. He's on pace for 33. Might he get to 40? I hope so. But the idea that he's having a normal home run on pace for 40 season, he is not. And then to bring up the all-star thing, when he knows whether he believes it in his heart or not, and I can't get into it, and listen, these players play a long time, and anytime you get recognized as an all-star, nobody's expecting you to, you know, poo-poo it or give it back or to downplay it. But he knows the perception, and he's got to understand who he's talking to. He's not talking to that reporter. He's talking to you. He's talking to Fliegelman. He's talking to Met fans. He knows the perception is he wasn't an all-star this year, didn't deserve to be, that he was holding Major League Baseball hostage because of the lack of turnout of a home run derby and his prestigious nature and success in that derby, and the idea they wanted him to be in the derby, and he threw out the gauntlet of, I'm not going unless I'm an all-star, had more to do with him being an all-star than his actual play on the field. And every single Met fan that can hear my voice knows both Lindor and Nimmo were more deserving Met All-Stars than he was. That's just the beginning of the comment. But what it reeks of to me is someone trying to justify his play heading into a big-time offseason. Because this comment is not about the team. He talked about playing winning baseball at the end of the year. It comes off completely as, hey, I'm still Pete Alonso. I could still hit 40 home runs. I'm still an all-star. I still have value. Instead of just acknowledging he's having a down year, but the team is winning, which is the easiest answer, hey, my numbers aren't important. The only numbers I care about right now is our record and how many games behind the wild card we are, whatever you want it to say. But to be so focused on his numbers, which is never a good, nobody cares about your numbers, Pete. Nobody cares. But to be so focused on how good he's doing this year when we all know he's not, to be this oblivious to it, this is the first time I'm really starting to believe that he has this contract on his mind. Now, it's always on your mind on some level. But I firmly believe Pete Alonso, I thought up until this moment, was capable of putting aside any contract thoughts, any deals with how much money he wants or how frustrated he might have been with the Met offers or whatever the case may be, and gone out there and played baseball. And that the struggles are strictly baseball's an impossible game to play, and you fail 3 out of 10 times in your Hall of Famer and all the other cliches we've heard a million times. Baseball's difficult, and he's having a down year. But to focus on how many home runs he's on pace to hit, which he's wrong on, to focus on the idea he's an all-star, which he shouldn't have been, and to focus on the opportunities he has at the end of the year and how he is proud of what he's done so far this year is so tone deaf and so about himself and not about the team in any way that this is the first time it's really hit me that this guy is stuck up on this contract. He's focused on it. And right now, that sounds like someone who is trying to desperately keep the value that he hoped and assumed he'd be heading into free agency with this year. And that's not about the Mets, and that's not about winning. Now, it's just one comment. I'm not trying to kill Pete because I believe Pete to be a good guy. I believe he's doofy. I've called him a doofus. He's a little doofy. I think he treated the antics at the home run derbies prior to this year, which he didn't have any, have been, you know, out there and a little silly. The OMG concert, he's clapping with, you know, offbeat. He's just a little out there. He's a different kind of dude. But I've always deemed him to be a team player, and I've always wanted him in a Mets jersey. And you know what? Even after these comments, I'm not saying he can't be a Met. Maybe the value comes down to a place where they feel it makes sense to sign him. But right now, as the Mets are battling for a playoff spot, to be so defensive and to cling to trying to preach to the masses about your value and how many home runs you hit and how proud you are of your season. I know the question was asked directly. I know he's not just giving it out willy-nilly. He just didn't go on a podcast and go on a tear about how good he's been this year. He's asked a direct question. But we know the perception of what's going on right now, and he knows how bad he's been with runners in scoring position, and he knows the little impact he's had on the winning. And he knows what's going on, perception by Met fans. And to answer questions directly about your struggles and to focus on your numbers and to focus on what you've already accomplished and how proud you are, that screams to me that wasn't Met Pete Alonso answering that question. That was free agent Pete Alonso trying to justify his value and his asks when it comes down to contract time. And that tells me, you know why he's struggling? You know why he's not having the season he's having? Because he's focused on getting paid. And that might be a bit harsh off of one comment, but it's the first time it feels like that. That's how tone deaf and defensive and selfish those comments were. Those are terrible comments. Those are just bad comments. Now, I'm hoping this will spark him and get hot. And listen, I don't begrudge anybody getting paid. I think all of us, Met fans who like him, Met fans who don't like him, I think everybody, we don't want to begrudge him any money. And he's entitled. And he's been under Met control for the 6 years. He's had great years. He's been giving them way more value than he's been compensated for. That's how it works the first couple of years. He's allowed to go out and hit the free agent market and get every last penny he deserves. By no means am I saying he shouldn't be thinking about money, his family. He's earned this moment to go out there and be a free agent. But that comment is singularly focused on it. And as the Mets were coming off two miserable losses in Anaheim against the Angels, and as they're battling for a playoff spot, to be that defensive and give that quote in that spot, that was free agent Pete Alonso letting his guard down for a moment and giving a terrible answer. And hopefully he can rebound, because here's the truth of the matter. They need him. They need him to be someone who can hit with runners in scoring position. They need him to be the guy who has been on pace for 45 to 50 home runs at this point in almost every full season of his career. They need Pete Alonso to be the guy who's earned the money he hopes to get in free agency. But right now, unfortunately for him, the play hasn't been there. And now he's going to start to really piss off Met fans while they watch this team fight and claw to stay alive, and he's not helping. And then he gives selfish comments like that. That was a rough scene for Pete Alonso yesterday. 888-808-1019, 888-808-1019. So we'll start with the Mets. We will get to the Giants. And I wonder if the Giants and Hard Knocks specifically, and so many things being out in the open, spurned a certain someone to be a little aggressive in this spring, in this training camp, a little feisty in this training camp, and a little out there to prove who the hell he is. So we'll get into that. We'll talk a little Mets baseball. We always talk Yankees baseball, as they'll start a series later tonight and bring back, hopefully, a little effort and a little hustle from the New York Yankees.